Boy Westwood, hardest in the game, legends live ever. Tim Westwood TV. London to Lagos, checking out the W Experience with Winky, my man. Get it down on it. Holler at the kid. One.
Peace, blessings, and love. I bring all that as I welcome you to a crisp episode of the W Experience with me, Winky Sugar. Is this your first time on the show? Your official welcome to the winning space every week on the W Experience. We serve you an unforgettable experience from some of your favorite creators, and we touch base on the winning, weirdest, wild, and wow experiences on the show. From music artists to actors, music producers, DJs, and lots more. So make it a date, and we'll be right here.
My name is Emiya Baga, show Black Boy, African rapper number one. You are hanging out on the W Experience.
It's the W Experience.
You're still tuned in to the W Experience. I know it's been crazy lately, and life at some point just hits you real hard, and you have nowhere to go. Guess what? God's got you. Remember, it's just another phase of your life, and you'll be glad you did not give up. It's the W Experience with Winky in your speakers, and today's episode of the show features one of Nigeria's finest music producers, a songwriter, a singer, and not to forget, he is a multiple award-winning music producer. He produced Falls' second studio album, Stories That Touch, and the entirety of the collaboration EP, Chemistry, by Falls and Simi. I can go on and on, but give it up for Cess, the Problem Kid.
What's up, brother?
Welcome to the W Experience, man.
My bro, it's been how many years, man? It's been decades, and that's man. Dope, man.
So first it was just Cess.
Yeah.
Now it's a problem.
Like, now so we see him. You feel?
I feel you, bro. Last time I had you on my show was back in the neighborhood.
I swear that was in Ilorin, right?
Yeah,
man, it's been a while, man.
And I must say, I'm happy for the growth. You
Thank
know,
you so much.
The journey so far.
Thank you so much, bro.
You know,
Thank
and you. I mean, we're proud, man.
Hey, man, that's why we do it, man. So, you know,
we're proud, man. So, I'm not trying to sound cliche right now, yeah. But you know, like most artists or music producers, you know, the church in any way influenced your craft.
Yeah. For me, unfortunately, I'll say no, because I'm from a typically Muslim home. My dad is a Muslim, but my mom is a Christian, actually. So I had a little bit of church choir, light stuff, but it wasn't like to that level of, oh, I'll say I was influenced by church music, because I'm from a Muslim family, you know, originally. But I can see where church can be such an important factor for music development, because you know, you are with, you know, your peers, you guys are experimenting and stuff, and then you know, there's free equipment, there's church equipment to experiment,
right.
But I will say, unfortunately, I feel like the advantage for me is it gave me the ability to create my own system of what I understand music should sound like and how you should express music, because I didn't have that rudimentary learn music theory the way church would teach you and other, it kind of created my own. I kind of had to create my own system of understanding music, and I think that's one of the
How did you create that?
Man, thanks to softwares like FL Studios for my FL Studios fans. Yo, because I always knew that I had music in me, but I didn't know how to express music,
right?
And because I didn't have, again, that rudimentary background in music that I would have gotten in like a church or something,
right?
So I was like always trying to figure out how. And then my cousin, Tosin, his name is Tosin, and Nikolai, had a laptop. You know how in those days now laptops will just install softwares for you, anyone. You just give it to one IT guy, you just install.
Right.
So one of the softwares that was installed there was FL Studio. And I think it was FL Studio 5 or something, one of the old ones. So I just opened it one day. And I just saw the software, and I just saw that you can press something and it's drums. You can press something and it's snares. You can press something and it's piano. And I was like, okay. So it just started from there. I was experimenting, doing very wax beats. Trust me, wax stuff. But it just clicked to me that, okay, I don't know how to play the piano. I mean, I had some idea about drums. I used to play drums in secondary school, but I don't have a drum set. I don't know how to play piano. But this is something that can help me still express my music without having those things.
Right.
And I was like, I think I found it, man. And I just started from there, from my cousin's laptop. person will get laptop. I know they allow his laptop. You say, I beg, I won't use my laptop. Type projects. Wait, just give me 2 hours. 2 hours, you know. And then it was, you just started from there. So I think not having that background in music gave me the ability to go out there and find my own way to express. And I think I was lucky to find FL Studios.
Nice. Yeah. So can you remember your very first production?
Man, I can't, but I know it was very whack. Very bruh. I wish I could find it, you know, to just kind of listen to it and see where I started from. But I mean that was years ago.
So what production actually made you look at production as you being a music producer now? And you're like, I'm all, this is it, man.
Yeah,
I have to chase this thing.
Yeah, that's a good question, because there are two levels to it. The first level is that made me actually love music production, like, but not particularly like see it as a career,
right?
But like love, like, oh, I love the way this thing sounds. I love the way it was Dr. Dre's California Love. With Pac. There was just something about that song that just sounded so amazing. I couldn't explain it. Now I understand that it was the bass line. The bass line was so like the bass is so captivating. And I just knew there was something about that song. And I just knew about that Dr. Dre just do. The beats were just dope. I just liked that. Right. But so when I started making beats for fun.
Right.
And then I heard, I think most people must have heard the story so many times. And then I heard Saz and Wizkid's Beat of Life. And I quit production.
You quit?
Yeah. Because at that point, I was like, I don't think I can make, because then I started making beats and stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, and then, you know, I think you should know that I was an artist. I used to sing, I used to perform.
Yeah.
So right. I was making beats for myself.
The Misfits.
You feel me? So at that time, I was like, yo, maybe I was more focused on being an artist then, but I was making beats, right? So, but I wasn't really seeing myself as a producer. So when I heard Beat of Life, I quit in my mind. I was like, there's no point, because I don't think I can make a beat in my life that would be that good.
I'm not sure about this.
Because that beat was so, and people don't understand that at that time, Saz was making EDM beats. That was EDM. That was electronic music.
Yeah, yeah.
At that time, I'm talking almost 15 years ago. Nobody was doing that in Africa.
More personal than the old dude.
Yeah, oh man, for real. If I, when you say 15, 10 years, you're like, yo, I thought that was yesterday, but
yeah, man.
I get too old, bro. So when I heard that, I quit. For that day, I quit for 24 hours. And then the next day, I was like, yo, man, this is an amazing, like, I was telling myself, like, man, how did this guy do this thing? Like, that brought up my curiosity. Like, man, I have to be, like, yo, I can't be making this kind of whack beats. I need to step up, because somebody's making this kind of beats in Lagos. Like, what am I doing with my life?
It's making you feel like, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah, but, you know, you started from doubt, and then it grew to, like, curiosity, like, how can my beats sound this dope? You feel me? And then I just started like putting in the work, started like, and that time I didn't have exposure to tutorials and you know, like, go online and watch videos. So I had to start going to studios. So there was this guy in Lorient, I don't know if you know him, his name is Dr. Tom.
That's my
mentor. He actually was the person that taught me how to, like, you know, finesse my production, you know. I mean, there's this guy called Excalibur, is a friend of mine. He was one that actually showed me how to use FL, because I was using FL and I was just roughing it when I said
playing with
it. But he was one that actually showed me, okay, if I want to do this, if I want to do this, this is the button. Really showed me. So those two people experimented out to how I started really growing as a producer. I started, you know, finessing, knowing, okay, you don't do this, you don't do this to your reverb, you don't do this to your bass. So those are the people that helped me. So after class like this, so as a law student, because I study law, we will still get class for like 3 p.m. I go tell my friend, guy, I go write your notes. I will go from school, I'll go all the way to Unity. I'll go to Unity. I'll go to Dr. Tom's studio and just be there. Just be watching him making beats. Just be watching him mixing, you know, his sessions for that access. I'll just be there. You know, just be learning. And that was how I, you know, just clicked to me that this is what I want to do. You know, it just clicked. At that point,
And you were still in school.
I was about to do lecture right this school. I swear, I do love the rough beats. I know people looked at me as a weirdo then, like, Baba, let's go, just go your class.
Yeah, because I'm just gonna ask, like, how did your folks find that? Like, you just woke up one day and you're like, I'm not practicing law. I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry, Mom. Like,
it was hard, dude. I don't go lie. Because,
like, did they even understand what production was?
My bro, like, such an amazing story. Because I feel like they gave me the battery to come down here and really hustle. Because they understood. Because now, it wasn't music for them, for me, wasn't weird because I had always been into music growing up. Funny story, there was a day we went for career day in school. And they asked us, you know how they do career day in primary school?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to be? Everybody was saying doctor. I said I want to be Michael Jackson.
What?
I literally said, like, they told me, I told them, they said, what do you want to be when you grow? I said Michael Jackson because that was my hero, right? So they'd always known that I had this thing for music,
right?
When I was like, I was always infatuated by music, Michael Jackson, the dances. So when it came for me to tell them after my law school,
right,
I want to make music,
you get the mind,
bro. It took me like
did one you week. Sit them down?
Though I spoke to my dad because I know if I spoken to my mom, this was scatter.
Yeah, you want to shake me?
But it took me a week to, you know, convince myself first that okay, this is it, and there's no turning back. And this is what I tell people every time: when you decide that this is what you want to do, or whatever you want to do in life, music or whatever,
right,
there is no plan B. I know that this sounds very, very insidious. Very scary. Whatever you do in life, there's no plan B. Because if you have a plan B, you've already psychologically put yourself in a place where
You're not going to give it your all.
You might fail. So you've given yourself an excuse to fail.
If this one will work, I go.
So I told myself, because at that time I was supposed to do my master's in law, right? And then I decided, I said, Shesson, if you are going to do this music thing, you are not going to go back to do your master's. There's no, it didn't work. So I'll just go back. This is it. So are you ready? I had to convince myself first.
First off.
You know, and I had to get to a place and say, okay, if this music thing does not work, what's your fallback? There's no fallback. So that means you are going to be a loser. That means you are going to be
a loser.
Right?
No,
and then I had to tell myself, are you okay with that? And I had to teach myself to say, okay, this is the life I've chosen. Do you know the level that you have to be to tell yourself, if this thing doesn't work, accept it, and this is going to be my life?
Did you make money before you made that decision?
No, I was broke as hell, bro. Like,
you didn't even make anything. You just felt like, I'm going to chase this, and you kept chasing it.
The thing is, what pushed me to be that person was I couldn't sleep at night, bro. At that time, I was already practicing. I was doing property law. So I was managing like properties for a couple of like people, helping them collect their rent. So I was already in law, like practicing. But I realized that I couldn't sleep at night, bro, because I felt like this is not what I want to do. Like, I just knew in my spirit that I don't, like, everybody was proud to call me, hey, lawyer. You know how your parents say, lawyer, don't want me. Anytime you just don't come,
barrister says.
Everyone was proud around me that I was a lawyer, except me, that I'm the lawyer. Like, I could not sleep at night. All I could think about was music. I just want to make music. I just woke up one morning, I cannot do this. Like, I knew that I was going to be unhappy if I didn't make music. So it was easy for me to say, forget money, forget, I just want to be happy. And I got to a place in my mind, I said, if this music thing does not work and I'm not successful, I did not blow, okay, so maybe I'll just find one studio and I'll just be managing one studio and I'll just be able to afford my life. But at least I'm happy.
That's right.
Right? At least I'm happy. Right? That was, for me, it was like, at least I'm happy. I'm not having sleepless nights.
Right.
At least I can afford my life. So maybe my life will not go as amazing as other people, but I'm happy. So that was where I got to in my mind. I convinced myself to that level. If I had talked to my dad and said, so there's nothing my father would have told me that would have told me. Because even me, I've told myself, if I become a loser, which is my parents' biggest fear.
Biggest
fear will be, what if it doesn't work?
Yeah.
And you don't make it. That's always their biggest fear, to protect you.
Right.
And me, that you're not scared of, I'm not telling you that if it doesn't work, I'm okay. I will be a loser. I accept I'll be a loser. That was how convinced I was. So it was easy for, but funny thing, I was going with fight. Whatever my father says, I will just pack my load and leave. And when I got there, my father just looked at me and I told him, Dad, I don't think I want to do this music thing anymore. I just want to, this law thing anymore. I just want to make music. Just looked at me for like 5 seconds. My father said, when you were filling your jam form, what did you feel? I said, look. And that asked me. He said, can you remember what I asked you to feel?
Huh.
I said, performing arts. He said, me that I'm your father, I knew that what you were supposed to do was performing arts. Because I saw that you just had the knack for arts, music, and dancing. Nami born you, I know. I told you, are you sure you don't want to do performing arts? I said, no, daddy, I wanted to do law. He said, so now that you're coming to me after 7-8 years, that this is what you want to do. I'm not surprised. Go and do your thing. Put in your best. You'll be fine. Yeah, I cried that day. I don't go lie.
Child.
I cried because I was like,
my papa don't see this.
Like, I was struggling. And my, but you know, they cannot tell you, don't do what you want. Because you said, that's why you asked me that. I did not force you to do law. So you are not, so you are not coming to me as, I that take your certificate. I did not ask you. I even asked you to do performing. I used to, ask you that. Are you sure you don't want to do performing? You said, no, I want to do law. So you all, now you use your leg.
Go also,
now you don't do the law. Go and do what you want to do. So that was the battery behind my back to come to Lagos and, you know, just give it everything. You feel me? So,
nice.
Yeah, that's the story.
Coming to Lagos and giving it your everything. What production changed everything for you?
Oh, man. That was... So there are two songs, right, that are always fighting for this, the answer to this question. It's between Kaishika for Files and LOB. Now, LOB was a very popular, like, you know, everybody knows LOB thing.
Yeah.
So, but for that, for me, that's my least favorite production. I think it's swag. Anyways, but... Kaishika was that bit that made people start looking at me like, okay, this guy, because it was so different. It was, the beat came at the time when nobody was making that type of beat. It was just different. So it was the beat that made people pay attention, that who's this guy called Ses? So I would say Kaishika.
How much was your first major pay?
Can't remember.
The first money
we didn't pay me, say ah, beat.
And you're like, Omo, Ses, you're getting paid for this right now, man.
Ah, man. At that time, when the industry was not as big as this, I think it was like 500K. At that time, I think it was 500K. And he paid me 500K for beats. I said,
you received your lot
for these beats. So by that time it was pretty much it. At that time, there were not too many people collecting 500 beats, to be honest. So I think it was that time, it was a big deal.
What production was that?
I can't remember. To be honest, I cannot remember.
I don't remember the figure. Like,
I just know the money. Like, yo, this money, how much this money figure? You know, at that time, yeah.
All right. So, are you currently signed to any label, or you're just doing your own thing?
Oh no, I feel like I was never really big on signing because I knew that with signing comes responsibility and. It's just not my thing. So I'm not signed. So, but right now I'm transitioning from just Ses as a brand into Ses as a company, into Ses as a business. So now I run a company called Problem Company. The company, what it does is we pick talent, we groom talent. We create content for them. We create their music. We build their you know, we build their talent as well as much as we can, and then we try to pitch them to labels, to distros.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So now it's more about helping the upcoming and, you know, going out there to look for the diamonds in the dirt and polishing them. That's what I'm doing now.
So as an artist and a music producer, songwriter, your own space in the industry is not the usual that everybody is looking at. And they're like, oh, now producer, oh, now artist, this is what you want to serve.
I want to serve. I want to help. Because I know that was something that, If I had a long time ago, it would have really helped me. If I had someone that just, you know, was there, that had all the ins and outs of the industry and just helped me, you know, tailor. So I want to be that for other people.
Nice. So let's talk royalties and split sheets.
Yes, sir.
A lot of people don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure someone is listening right now and the person is like, you know, I've actually been thinking about this, but as a music producer, I don't know how I'm going to be making some extra money from
from my stuff.
My stuff.
Yeah.
Than just getting paid for whatever it is I'm doing. Making the beat. So yeah, take your money and bounce.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, that makes sense. I feel like even for me, for a very long time, at least at the beginning of my career, I had that issue also. And I think it's okay not to know. This is something that people need to understand. Like, it's okay to be ignorant. Just don't stay ignorant. We didn't all know, right?
I'm
thankful that the industry has gone to a place where people are more comfortable with having this conversation and you know, this right. But as a producer, I won't go too into detail with all the nitty-gritty, but I just need you to understand as a producer that you have two sets of rights. So you have the rights to the master. So when a song is divided into two, there's masters and then there are the other like rights. At this point I can't remember,
because songwriters don't go.
Yeah, all those rights. So so the masters is the song itself. So if the song is they can pay your production fee. That one is out of the way. But if the song is being put on, say, iTunes and whatever, and things, you have your percentage of that. That is one end. That's the masters. The other end is the composer's rights. So because you are a composer, you have some rights by law. You have some percentages. So those are the things that, you know, you have as your royalties, you know, your mechanical rights, a lot of things. So those are your rights also. So you have, and you need to do a bit of research to know all these rights, right? I might not be able to tell you all the things on
whether it's one song or a project.
You have rights on all those things, you know. And so it's your duty to go out and do some research and know where are my rights, right? Now that's one part of it. Now the other part is, how do I get this money? So you can know that my money is here, right? But you don't know how to get the money. Right. That's another part. So now you have to be a part of a few like organizations. They call them PROs that you need to be a part of that will help you get those monies. You know, in Nigeria we have the COSUN, so you have to register for COSUN and that. Outside Nigeria there are things like ASCAP, there are things like PRS. You know, there's a new one called Song Trust, I think. Yeah, so there are a few like organizations like that that you now have to be a part of to collect those monies. Now the final part is, how do I now go about collecting those monies? When you do a song, you must highlight your rights immediately. You do the song and the person says, I like the song, how do you drop it? Okay, these are my rights on this song. I want also percentage on this.
Are you the one that will tell? Are you the one to tell the artist?
No, you can. If you have that kind of rapport, or me, I would advise, get a lawyer. That's my job. That's my advice for you. Get a lawyer. Your lawyer will write the artist and their team that, okay, well, this is my client. Or my client is asking for this, asking for this, asking for this over this song. Once you guys agree, you send a split sheet. It's in that split sheet that you people will now write these figures and sign. Because you can't use word of mouth.
You can't.
You can't say, okay, for this song, give me 10% royalty, 50% publishing, give this and that with word of mouth. And you have to say yes. PRO will ask you, where is the evidence that we should pay you this money from this song? Right. That's what split sheet does. So the split sheet will be filled and signed. So that once you fill your so the PROs will give you a form. Once you fill it, they will ask you for your split sheet as evidence that you have that right,
right,
for them to pay you. So those are the things. So you just need to do a bit of research to know,
learn.
It's not beans. This is your life. This is your life work. So you have to put in that that amount of time. So that's a summary really of where your what it entails, where your rights lie, and how to get them.
Nice. You've produced a lot of bangers for a lot of artists, and you've also made soundtracks for movies. You know, so that means currently you're getting some royalties.
I did try. But I mean, the thing is, for me it's like the way I look at royalties is not, and I think most people should try to look at it this way, it's not the money for now,
right?
You feel me? It's, it makes sense when it accumulates. You get what I'm saying? So it's it's best for you to have a large body of work,
right,
spread over like a large, you know, large area of like influence, different artists, so that over time they all accumulate to we have a lot of value. So now I just heard that Justin Bieber sold his catalog
for $2 million.
One person sold his catalog for $500 million. That is what, because now it's not because you are collecting that royalty, it's because after a long period of time the publishing, your royalties and your song have been valued
right
to be worth that amount. So royalty is not about, oh, I don't do the song, oh, they go pay me my money. Mm-mm. It's about doing it as much as possible. So even if you're not particularly concerned about, oh, my royalty, I need 10% now, I need 20%, even if it's meager 5%, but trust me, that 5% from 10,000 people with something, you feel me? So yeah, I wouldn't say that, oh, I'm living large of royalties. The reality is I can buy Bentley with my royalties. No, but I know that over decades, over years,
that's right,
you know, I'm going to accumulate something and it's going to be worth so much. You know, so that is a long-term game.
True. Nice. Okay, so for a producer in the making, or someone who is actually a made producer right now and they're just thinking about, you know, there's an offer on the table right now to get signed to a label, and they're thinking about it, should I sign this or just day my day, just be on my own, run my business, and then stay focused on it and be religious with it, or accept this deal, maybe it's some money that the person hasn't seen before, and they're like, I'm on an opportunity for me to actually, you know, put pen to paper and just say yes to this and be happy.
I think a lot of people have demonized labels. Like labels, once you sign, like your life don't finish. Like it's business at the end of the day, right? And as an adult, I would believe that anybody that wants to do, you're an adult, you know what is good for you.
True.
You feel me? And you know who you are.
That's right.
The truth is, some people are not supposed to be entrepreneurs. You don't have the mental capacity or the behavioral capacity to be an entrepreneur. Being an entrepreneur means a lot of discipline.
A whole lot.
You feel me? Like a lot of logical decision making. A lot of, you know, being stringent. So it's not, so this,
if you don't have it, you don't have
it. So this social media buzz of everybody saying I'm an entrepreneur is so misleading and it's making a lot of people make mistakes. Bro, trust me, some of us need labels because we don't have what it takes to be individual, to be independent artist. It's that simple. It's not meant for it. Just like some people are, some people work in banks, some people are civil servants, some people are business. It's not for everybody. So it's always very misleading when people demonize, oh, don't sign to labels. My own advice is, what do I, ask yourself, what do I need? What am I capable of doing? Do I have the resources? By resources, it's not just money, right? It's, do I have the network or the connection to do this thing myself? Like, if you're somebody that know people,
right,
like you know how to get things done, you're like, you have the connection, you have the network, because those are the things that labels bring to the table. Labels already have, like,
there's a team
on ground,
but people to handle this.
But if you know in your mind that, oh, I get boy, we go shoot this video for me, man. I get this guy, we go help me with this thing. I get, like, you have the team,
right?
Then you really know in your heart that I don't need a label, I can do this thing myself. Because if label help you, they will want to ask for a percentage, and they want to have recoupable. Right? They will recoup their money back. So if you're like, it don't pay me if I sign. Like you can make that decision in your mind and say, I'm just giving these people money because I can really do this thing myself. If I'm not being lazy and I don't have to give them any percentage. Then, you know, so there's an artist called Ross. His name is Ross.
Right.
He's an independent, one of the most successful independent artists. That's how he thinks. I can get this thing done myself.
I think he said he dropped like 11 projects.
Yeah.
Before, like, he actually made it to limelight.
He knew that, okay, yes, I just need to put in so much time. I have the guys, I can shoot my video myself. And he went that way. But if you're not looking at Ross, because Ross did it, and I said, I'm all these labels that scammers, Joe. But you don't have, you don't have Ross's level of hustle.
Right.
You get me? You don't have Ross's mentality. You don't have his team. You don't have his people. You don't, you get, you're not exposed to the kind of, like, resources and people around him. But man, you go lost. So it's, look at your situation and ask yourself what you need. First part. Second part is, now get a lawyer. Bro, a lawyer that has your best interest in mind, read the fine print. If there are terms in the contract that not pay you, walk away. It's that simple. Like,
have you ever experienced anything like that? Maybe you found out that there was a clause.
I'm at the rough side. Like, I felt like, personally, because I felt like I'm a bit difficult to deal with because I can be a purist when it comes to creativity. I don't want anybody to touch my work. Do you get what I'm saying? I don't want anybody to, like, if I want something done because of what music means to me. So me and Label, if we fight, you get, I feel blow, if you step, like, I feel toxic, I want to go get, blow the CEO. I want to drop this kind of period. You go tell me, say, I'm going to drop project like this person. Now we go fight. So I know that I might not be able to survive in a Label setting because of my nature as a person. So I try to stay away, but I look for how I can still work with, like, distro and labels a different relationship, not on the sign. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm still open to working with them, but not on that level. So what I'm saying is, it's not nobody. So I always hate it when people cry wolf. Oh, Label did this to me. Did they not give you a contract?
Right.
Is your signature not on this contract?
Didn't you go through?
Did you read the contract? So you signed, you read it. At that point, it made sense to you, right?
And you signed
it. It's served you at that time, and now you want to come and say that this contract was unfair, but at the time you signed it was fair. So, like, I always like to be a realist. I know it's a very, very sensational view to say that, oh, labels are like, everybody loves it. Oh, make no, but you cannot demonize labels because they offered you a deal and the deal seemed.
Some people even get advances, like a lot of money.
I give you advance. Say to push this album, I have to make my money back. It's a business. I'm not giving you a gift. It's not gifts. I don't gift you the money. It's a loan.
Even if you're my brother, I said,
I loaned you that, okay, this album. So now I'm giving you this money for it. It's just like what Alaba used to do. Alaba will pay you, they will collect your album, they will hustle it and make their money back. And then once they make their money back, anything that's left after the money, you guys will not share it at a percentage, right? It's the same thing. Label will advance you, right? When they make their money back, you guys will now continue to split the money at a different percentage. It's that simple. So now they don't pay your advance. Now you don't use your advance flex. You go buy a car. You go buy a house. You get what I'm saying? You money go flex. Money didn't finish. Label can't talk. Say, okay, want to make our money back because say, oh, they cheat you. Like, so it's weird.
So think about it. So from Omomuda to Spotlight, what is Cess working on right now?
I just had this epiphany that I should not really be talking about my projects that are still in work because somehow I just end up jinxing it in a way, and I'll just not maybe put it out. Or so I'm not going to say anything about the projects, right?
But you're working.
But I'm just I'm working, and it's interesting. That's all I'll say. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay, so there's this challenge that you just wrapped up with Miss Keys.
Yes sir.
You know, you announced the winner of the challenge like, was it yesterday or a few days ago?
Yeah, some days ago.
Well, what's the guy's name again?
Oh, his name's Priest. Man, like Priest.
Is he one of the talents you are gonna be working with?
Definitely,
you know, the problem company.
I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but for now, I just want to be instrumental to his, you know, to his growth as an artist, even on the personal level. Like, you know, right now there are no pen to paper plans that this is problem company. It's just okay, I put out a context. This guy really came through. I love this beat, and I just want to help him as much as I can on a personal level. That's where it is now. But in the future, if it grows to be that,
right,
you know, on a business level,
right,
so be it.
Two more questions before we're gonna wrap up.
All right, man.
First one is, what are your industry dislikes?
Right now,
an artist and a music producer.
I'm going to merge it.
Okay,
now as both. One of the things that I really don't like right now is that the industry has moved from
talent more to showmanship. So I'll explain. Before, it used to be about, man, this guy is dope. And your talent was enough to really speak, right?
Right.
But now it just seems like it's more about just how much you can flamboyancy and how viral you can go, you know, and how, and now people are just doing anything. People are literally going to do anything to be viral. Do you feel me? So it has moved from this guy is actually really talented to showmanship. Anybody, whatever you can do to trend,
just put it out there,
you know, whatever you can do. So people are making ridiculous TikTok videos
that are not even supposed to make it out, you know, there.
People are making ridiculous, like, trends. Like, it's ridiculous.
And the funny thing is they're actually going viral.
Yeah, because that's what the world want to see right now. You feel me? That's what it has moved into. I think even before we started recording, I said something. I said it's moved from what you can do to who you are now.
True that.
That's what consumption of, you know, is for consumers. That's what consumers enjoy now. So it's more about who you are. And people are boring. Like, you know, so they need to, if I want to blow now, I know I'm very boring. I'm the most boring human being on earth. If I begin to show my face, I will start losing, like, people will not follow me because I'm boring. There's nothing interesting about me. I just know how to make beats, and, you know, that's just me. But to now be at that level, I need to be something else. I need to start acting a different way. I need to start presenting myself as being interesting and be more than what I am. Like,
right.
And I understand that that's what it is. I'm not hating. That I'm not a hater. I'm not angry. That, you guys are, you know, all those old men that were saying back in my days. No, I'm not saying that. Like, it is what it is. That's what things have become. And it's fair game, right?
Yeah, it is.
If you don't adapt, you will die. That's life, right? So I understand that. Yeah, in my way, I have to find my way to
make it work.
Make it work, but. I would rather, like, I miss the days. Let me just put it that way. I miss the days.
Not trying to sound old right now, but
I miss the days when it was more about, like, yo, this man is talented. And, you know, it was 50-50. It was 50% talent and 50% showmanship. You feel
right.
You know, you could see the Dibanjis. Dibanji was a showman. Like, you know, he was on stage, but still, he gave you the bangers. Right,
that's right. He created, you can see Wizkid,
his music was amazing, and then his swag was there. Like, you could see, but now I'm not even gonna mention names, man. But like, you see songs that this guy knows, Sabi, but there's just something about the way he presents himself that just sells it. And he just,
who are the youngins you're listening to right now?
Oh man, I'm listening to all the youngins, bro. All the youngins, bro. Even the ones that are not like super popular. You know, all the youngins, man. I love where music is right now. Like, I'm not gonna say, oh, our music is getting worse. Music is actually getting better, right? And I'm proud of what the producers are doing, the young producers are doing, what the artists are doing now. You know, I'm really proud of it. And I'm excited to. I'm looking forward to working with a lot of youngins. That's where I'm at right now.
Good. So with what Afrobeat is doing in the world today, what's your advice to creators in the industry who are almost giving up on the grind right now because they feel like, come on, if you don't have a platform, you know, there is no label that is my backup right now to help me push, and they're just in that verge of, or more,
there's no point,
I'm not sure about this. You know, what do you have to
it can be a very damning reality to see, okay, how much influence a lot of these platforms have in pushing,
right?
You know, but my question would always be, why are you doing music in the first place? You know, ask yourself why you chose it in the first place. What's that deep reason why you make music, and let that drive you every day. You know, sometimes it's a gift that was put in you for the world. It's not really for you. The gift was not put there for you, because if it was for you, you could just stay your room, they sing just for yourself, vibe. Right? But the gift was not put there for you. It was put there to be shared with the world. So now, if you are too engrossed in self-serving things, like, I want to blow, because
you blowing is your, you are serving yourself, you want to be popular.
Yeah.
Then it kills your gift, right? You are killing your gift because you are so engrossed in what you want.
You want to be seen.
Yeah. But that's not why God gave you a gift. The gift, so you must share it regardless. You feel me? It's painful that, oh man, I have all this talent and I think I should be popular. I'm not. Sorry. You know,
that's something about it. I'm putting it out there.
Sorry, but your job is to create. That's why that gift was given to you. So you have no excuse. You feel me? You have no excuse. Do what you gotta do. My advice would be work on your art. Make sure that your art is so dope, it's undeniable. Like, you are dope. You know in your heart that you are dope. Get to that level. Once you get to that level, surround yourself with people that believe in your dream. You know, I think one of the biggest mistakes is a lot of people don't want to start small. They're scared. And I don't blame us. When, before social media, right? The only time we saw Michael Jackson was, or all the stars, was when they dropped a new CD. Or when they did an award show. So there was little exposure to stardom and all these 10 million views on Spotify and 1 million, you get, we didn't have all those numbers, you know, so much until it was released on, say, Source Magazine, or until it was released in one favorite, in one popular stuff.
But now, and the rest of them,
when you open Instagram, this person has told you that, oh, I have 10 million views here. This person has told you, oh, I have 50 million views here. Next thing you're seeing that, ah, this person just won Grammy. Okay, so now there's so much, you're so, you're over-stimulated with so much information that you are killing your creativity. Like, you are breaking your own heart, exposing yourself to this much information and what everybody's doing, right? So close your eyes, if possible, remove yourself, log off, and just focus on yourself. Really, focus on your art. Focus on building a team around yourself that believe in what you are doing, and start small. You know, set long-term goals and short-term goals. You mean, that's what I always tell people. Say, okay, my long-term goal is I want to blow. I mean, fine, beautiful, everybody wants to blow. But what are the short-term goals that we'll do to get to those places, right? Start small. Okay, I have 1,000 followers now on Instagram, 1,000 here. Okay, how can I reach more than this number of people?
Right.
How can I reach more people? What is my budget? You feel me? Because you need money.
How do I create my own community?
Do you get that's what happens. And that's, and once you do that organically, you're building. The beauty about music and the arts is that it's attractive. It's like a flower. Once people see you blossom, right? You start attracting other people.
Oh, that's beautiful. Insects. Wow.
So people gravitate towards something that's shining, something that is bright, something that is fresh. So once you start doing your thing and organically you are growing, people are gravitating towards you, you have your like organic fan base, trust me, life will begin to, you begin to attract people naturally. People will begin to just gravitate towards you. You feel me? So don't be scared of the humble beginnings. Don't be scared of the small numbers. Celebrate the small numbers. If you had a short-term goal of adding from 2000, not just follower numbers, 2000 people that would influence, that like engage with you, like that properly engage with you, and in months you added 500 people, that's a win. Because trust me, you can have 1 million followers, right? And just have less than 1,000 people come to your show. I have just 500 people come to your show. This December, it happened to a lot of people.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But you can have 10,000 followers and have a loyal 1,000 people.
They'll be there for you.
Do you get? So it's not about your follower count. It's about the people that able to engage you. So what's the difference about somebody that has 1 million followers and was only able to pull 800 people to a show, and you that you have 10,000 followers and you know that it's sure for me, but as bad, half of those people will come. You get what I'm saying? That's 5,000 people, or I know that 1,000 people will come because you engage them. Like, you get that? This is the secret for a lot of all those rock groups in America, that you don't know their name, but you see that, oh, these guys have, they're so successful because they have, maybe they have just 1,000, 100,000 followers,
but when they connect with their
when they do a concert, 5,000 people will come. If you do a 5,000 capacity show, you God, that's huge.
It is, man.
Our whiskey and people then they do 5,000. But if you have 100,000 followers and you know that 5,000 people will come to your show because it connects with you, right? They love what you're doing. Like you like they love they have your stickers and your like your poster in your house.
Part of their
you drop your merchandise, it sells out.
Right, yeah.
Because they will buy it, they buy the new shirts. You are successful.
True that.
You get like you might not have 10,000, you might not have 100 million streams.
The number one song in the
country. But you are making money. You get what I'm saying? And you are successful and you can pay your bill and you can live a beautiful life, even bigger than these people that. So sometimes it's all about perspective. You are looking at this thing the wrong way.
Right.
You are looking at a facade, like an industry that was created on showbiz. They have painted a picture of what success looks like. And you have bought into it. That's why you feel so downtrodden and you feel like, oh, I can't do this. This is, if I'm not having these numbers, then what am I doing?
Because of what you're feeding your mind.
Yeah, but I'm telling you that all those things are cap. The real money is in actual engagement. It's in real engagement, organic engagement. And this is what brands also look at when they want to call you for endorsements and stuff. If a brand sees that, oh, you have 100,000 followers, there's another person that has 2 million followers, they will first say, oh, like the 2 million guy. But if they now do a bit more research and they see that your comments, you are engaging at least 1,000 people. They are talking to you every day. You know, you are dropping something. Out of those 100,000 followers, you are like 5,000 people are like engaging with you. Like, like anything you say, they are like. And the person with 2 million followers, you know,
hardly see
50 people. Like, they know that because the brand is looking at engagement for their product that they're trying to sell. So they know that if you post at least an average of 2,000 or 5,000 people are going to engage with that product. And you know how algorithm works on Instagram. Once too many people are engaging, they project it. So a brand, that's how they look at it. So don't get carried away. I don't have 50 million streams. And trust me, I don't know if you know about stream farms now.
Yeah, man.
A lot of those numbers are fake numbers. So crazy. Don't go use fake number and fake blue. Kill your career. I rest my case.
Thank you so much for
it was my honor.
Coming on the show.
It was my honor to be here.
We appreciate
my love, man. You know how it is. This is family, man. Anytime.
Thank you so much, man.
Thank you for having
God
me.
God bless.
Yeah, what's up, people? Reminiscing the building. You're tuned in to the W Experience with Winky. Don't touch it. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of the W Experience. Winky Sugar is taking his bow, and you already know where you're from does not always dictate where you're going in life, but it says a lot about who you are and where you're from. Don't forget your roots. Stay true, stay curious, and be you. Peace and love.